Is this working?
Hello.
Macquarie Sunday Session.
Macquarie Sunday Session.
It's the Macquarie Sunday Sessions.
It's a bunch of students.
I'm a university student.
Sunday evening.
Is that the time?
Yes.
Oh, jingos.
You're listening to the Macquarie Sunday Sessions.
I dare you not to listen to Macquarie Sunday Sessions.
On 2SER, 107.3.
I mean, I probably wouldn't do that. G'day, g'day, and welcome to the Macquarie Sunday Sessions, a Macquarie University student takeover broadcast here on 2SER 107.3. My name is Tom Benson, and tonight I'd like to take you on a bit of a journey around the world, from a Redfern Garden rooftop to the streets of Paris, even to the grounds of a Quidditch pitch. And I promise you that you won't even need to spend a cent on flights, accommodation, or travel insurance. I've got it all covered, so brew yourself a cuppa and get comfortable, because ahead in the Sunday sesh, you'll be hearing some stories that will hopefully leave you thinking, wow, I've never thought of that before, whilst also mixing in some groovy tunes to hopefully relieve you of the Sunday night anxieties. So to kick the Sunday session off, here is a little track from Aldous Harding. This is Pilot.
The National Institute of Dramatic Art, one of the world's top drama schools. Come along to NIDA Open Day on Saturday, June 15 from 9 to 4. Whether you want to perform on stage or screen or work behind the scenes, NIDA has a master's, bachelor or diploma course for you. Get info about our courses, watch classes, meet NIDA alumni and see our performances for free. Register to attend by searching NIDA Open Day. NIDA sponsors 2SER 107.3.
Macquarie Sunday Sessions, 2SER 107.3. You're seshing out with the Macquarie Sunday Sessions here on 2SER 107.3. Now, how's your cuppa going? Do you need a refill? Oh, obviously I can't help you with that. However, may I recommend a nice brew of butter beer, because our first stop on our travels tonight is Hogwarts. Well, a similar campus named Macquarie Uni, as we have received an invite to a training session of the official Quidditch team. You heard that right, a real-life version of Quidditch played at Macquarie University. So I'll give you time to refill your beverage, strap yourself in, and get ready for our flight here on 2SER 107.3.
Composer Keaton Henson's multi-sensory work Six Lethargies makes its Opera House debut on May 31 for Vivid Live. Using audiences' emotional states to control aspects of the visual and lighting design, Six Lethargies will be performed by the Opera Australia Orchestra and aims to express and explain the feelings of anxiety and depression. The night features a Q&A session afterwards. Book now for Six Lethargies at sydneyoperahouse.com. 2SER sponsors.
Without the $1,000 to her name, so me and B the same name in camouflage. Drop so many S's off my chest, they call it abotage. Camo cars looking for that buzz, like I'ma land on Mars. They tried to ride along, but none could ever handle bars. Heavy on a hellion, my strings bring a delin. Eureka on the speaker, that must mean that I'm a gelin. Now I'm back, so they steppin', and I'm black, so they stressin'. That the fact that my weapon is just that, I'm black, so they terrified. Put the song on record so it never dies. I did the wrong, so my son could always get it right. What's being known if you ain't ever leaving home and speaking on it? You want a gimmick? Try being honest. That's a rare commodity in this here economy. But A, me and B will make them see like Pam and Tommy Lee.
My apologies.
Turn that to my money. Round up the squad. Don't worry who I signed, buddy. You dirty like me on T? That's just fine, honey. Talking all the bullshit and now they're trying to hide from me.
Please, Bleach, you don't wanna shoot the messengers. But I wanna do something to leave the messages. Living proof, you gotta learn the lesson is. You fuck around, you have to make a mess of you. I got a letter from the government. Took it where my oven is. Cooked it on the stovetop. Fuck them on my none of it. I asked them where my cousin went. You had him in your fucking pen. Killed him. Got a holiday. It's not a punishment. So line up the white like a Maradona. You fucked around and made me do some shit that I don't wanna. Apologies. Don't follow me or you're a goner. I know you're sorry. And I'm sorry, but I gotta.
I'm sorry.
You have just listened to the track Sorry by hip-hop duo AB Original featuring Katie Baker. Superb stuff, guys. Now, I have something to admit. When I turned 6 years old, I held a Harry Potter party, and a gift I received was a swift, decked-out broomstick that I was told could apparently fly like they do in the Quidditch games. Now, you could imagine my disappointment when I realised that this was not a real broomstick and was in fact a normal broom that had just been covered in glitter. But imagine my reaction when I find out 15 years later, that the game of Quidditch actually does exist in the real world and can be played by anyone. But what does it involve? Let's find out. If you browse the Macquarie University website and browse the University Sports Club's webpage, you will come across your standard set of sports. Cricket, rugby, soccer, swimming, even some pretty uncommon ones like fencing and cheerleading. However, there is one club in particular on this page that stands out to me, and one that caught my eye immediately when browsing this page for the first time. The Macquarie University Quidditch Club. I initially had to double check that this was indeed the Quidditch I was thinking of, you know, the one where they fly broomsticks around in the Harry Potter movies. I was right for the most part, as the description on the Macquarie Sports Club's page reads, "The game Quidditch is a unique mixed-gender sport based on the sport of the same name in J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter series, but adapted to be played without magic." Well, of course, why wouldn't this be adapted to a legitimate type of sport? If you take away the whole broomstick and magical flying ball aspect of the game, as depicted in the Harry Potter books and movies, you've got yourself a very strategic, well-rounded, and not to mention physical sport for all ages. So I then decided to get in contact with the official team of Macquarie University, the Mac Marauders. I wanted to witness a real-life game of Quidditch because, well, let's be real, the Harry Potter movies make it look like the best thing to ever play. So I was invited to attend and watch one of their training sessions near the university.
So I'm Jacinta, my house is Slytherin, and I play Beater.
My name is Ryan, I play Keeper, Chaser, Seeker, maybe going into Beating, and I am Gryffindor.
My name is Anna, I'm a Gryffindor, and I am the team captain, and I play Beater.
Now, from afar, this just looks like a team training for a sport like soccer or rugby, but come a bit closer and you'll see the occasional broomstick and some hoops set up on either end of the playing area. But what really stands out to me is how well everyone is getting along and how much they seem to enjoy playing Quidditch.
I actually heard about Quidditch through high school when they had Macquarie Uni come out and tell us all about it. And they're just like, yeah, you know, we have the Quidditch team.
Well, at the beginning of last year, I was basically dragged along by a friend to a bowling event. Met with the team, lovely bunch of people.
I was an exchange student and I was walking around all week. And I saw the stall, and I'm a Harry Potter fan, and I joined. They're like, sure, I'll give that a try. I don't really like sports, but if there's that incentive, why not?
Started playing the sport, picked it up fairly quickly, and I've been having fun ever since.
Like, no one approached me from the team or anything. I just decided to show up to a training and be like, hey, I want to play. I haven't played sport in ages. Let's do this.
But don't start thinking that Quidditch is an easy sport because it came from a novel. In fact, there is a lot of action taking place on the field.
You basically have three games happening at once. You have the chasers with the quaffle, they're trying to score.
A keeper, they can stick their hand through the hoop to stop shots.
The beaters are trying to get the opposition players out of the way.
Seekers, they're the ones that catch the snitch. The one that gets all the celebration at the end of the game.
So a lot of people get really confused when it comes to the snitch. It's actually a person from the referee squad in a like yellow shorts with a tag on the back. And so after 18 minutes of gameplay, so everyone actually has time to play the game, they'll have the snitch released on pitch and one team has a seeker each and they have to try and get the tag off the shorts. So kind of like Oz tag a bit. All whilst game's still going on, getting beat and trying to score goals.
So I love things happening once. It's kind of playing real life chess really fast because all the games interact with each other. A lot happens all the time, which is great.
It's because the rules are developing and changing because we are such a new sport. We've brought out some new rules like with contact and like with bludger control and play and all that. So everyone's still working it out as we go. But usually the head ref will know everything. They should.
Seems pretty fun, right? Not only does Quidditch have well-rounded, fair and unique rules, it also has a solid league structure here in Australia to allow players to play locally and nationally.
Every month, you verse like a different group of teams. At the end of the season, it goes into a finals, and depending on the games that you win, you battle it out for place in the division and possibly going up or down divisions.
In New South Wales, we have 14 teams, and we all compete in the NQL, the New South Wales Quidditch League. We also have a state championship, so we have tryouts for each state, who then verse in a sort of state of origin scenario.
Now, I'm going to be honest here, I wasn't able to attend an actual game of Quidditch against another team. However, I could definitely get a sense of why the players love this game and this team so much.
Some games are really lighthearted, just there for a laugh. Other games are much more intense, high-stakes games. Nationals would probably be the highest stress because it's versing teams from all across Australia and it's really battling it out for glory in the country.
However, it is the community of passionate and young-at-heart players that keep the game alive.
I'd say it's probably the community that keeps me here.
What makes me want to stay is definitely the friends I've made. Meeting my, like, well, now boyfriend, and, you know, like, getting to hang out with him on the weekends, on extra training sessions. It really does help that, you know, I get to hang out with him whilst doing something that we both enjoy, whilst being active. And yeah, it's really fun, like, just the active sort of part of it. But the friends you make is the biggest, like, thing. It's the most wonderful community, even outside of Macquarie. Just the general New South Wales competition have the most lovely people, like, you'll ever meet. They're so accepting and kind.
I think there are a lot of things that make Quidditch so special. It's a really good game to play if you want to get into sports, but you haven't been doing this your whole life. Quidditch started less than 15 years ago. So everyone that shows up hasn't played before. So you're all on the same level, you can all learn together, you can all make mistakes together and become good together.
Even though it's a game made up in the mind of an author, the game of Quidditch is young and has the potential to become even bigger and more popular than it is today. In the future, we might be seeing televised matches of Quidditch with players that are currently in university Quidditch teams. Regardless, attending a practice session with the Mac Marauders really made me realise how communities are formed over common interests and ideas. So will I see you on the pitch in the future?
Macquarie Sunday Sessions. 2SER. Ha, ha, ha. Ka-caw. 2SER 107.3.
Wow, honestly, I am so glad I got to witness that incredible stuff. Plus, it means I can cheer for an actual official Quidditch team apart from Hufflepuff. And yes, I am a Hufflepuff. You just listened to Tom Benson's little insight to the Macquarie Uni Quidditch team, the Mac Marauders. Now, if you're interested in the Macquarie Uni Quidditch team, you can contact them through their Facebook page or through their email provided on the Macquarie Uni Sports Club webpage. You're listening to the Macquarie Sunday Sessions, a Macquarie University student takeover broadcast here on 2SER 107.3. Now, have you ever gotten yourself into a sticky situation when you're on holidays? An incident with a local, a language barrier, or maybe even faced attempted robbery? Well, that's exactly what happened in our next piece as we travel to Paris. How did the victim survive and fight off those pickpockets? Double check your seatbelt because this is going to be a very long flight.
Composer Keaton Henson's multi-sensory work Six Lethargies makes its Opera House debut on May 31 for Vivid Live. Using audiences' emotional states to control aspects of the visual and lighting design, Six Lethargies will be performed by the Opera Australia Orchestra and aims to express and explain the feelings of anxiety and depression. The night features a Q&A session afterwards. Book now for Six Lethargies at sydneyoperahouse.com. 2SER sponsors.
I like it, you're wrong. I was a good friend.
listening to Macquarie Sunday Sessions.
You are listening to 2SER's Macquarie Sunday Sessions, a Macquarie University student takeover, and that was Julia Jacklin's You Were Right. Now, have you ever gone on holidays and had everything go as planned? Maybe the food was just as delicious as you'd hoped and the seas were just as crystal clear. But then suddenly, have all your dreams go south? Maybe you missed your flight or you had a terrible encounter with the local and unfortunately it just soured your whole trip, potentially even disturbing your love for the place you came to visit. Well, that's exactly what happened to Michaela Floriano when she faced up against a Parisian vandal. And will she ever go back? Let's find out.
Paris. A lot of people seem to dream about Paris. In fact, I distinctly remember all the girls in my French class running around after school speaking only in broken French.
Ça va bien.
I couldn't tell you exactly why we did it, but I assume in the romantic allure of the city of lights and romance, maybe it was this idea that one day we'd go to Paris and we'd be whisked away by young and dashing French artists and painted tourists by the Seine. And then a love affair begins and we're dancing under the Eiffel Tower as it sparkles at 11 o'clock at night after we spent the whole day dancing on the chairs of a brasserie. But Paris wasn't like that at all for me, at least for the most part. It all started on our second night in France. My friend Maddie and I were walking excitedly back from a tiny corner supermarket. We had just bought ourselves dinner, some blue cheese, brie, prosciutto, a baguette, and a bottle of rosé. With our cheese in hand, Maddie was trying to give me some French lessons.
Merci.
Whilst we attempted to avoid eager Parisian salesmen cornering tourists.
Bonjour, madame. Yes.
But all of a sudden, Maddie spotted this quiet, dimly lit park. We raced over, toppled on the grass, and popped open our bottle of rosé. Suddenly, this man appears on my left, about a metre or so away from me. He leans over and asks me in hushed French, "Do you have a lighter?" I tapped Maddie on her knee and mimicked my left. She peered around me to get a better look at the man and said, "Excuse me?" To which he replies, "Do you have a lighter?" Just as Maddie opens her mouth to respond, I can see her bag in the corner of my eye being whisked away behind her. My whole body was paralyzed. I just was in complete shock of what was happening and didn't have time for any real complex thoughts besides, "Oh no, oh no." But amazingly, Maddie had the opposite reaction. She stood up and started screaming at the man all sorts of profanities in French. The pickpocket, completely in awe of Maddie, started walking backwards and shaking his arms back and forth as if begging for mercy. He dropped her bag and him and his accomplice dashed off in the distance. But although it ended all well and good, at the time I was pretty enraged. From that moment, I had to be extremely cautious. Like every 5 minutes, I had to check if I still had my wallet on me, and I couldn't trust anyone besides Maddie. It didn't help that the very next day we had rocks thrown at us by some Parisians in a park, and some of the girls in our hostel berate us. Although that's a completely different story. So by the end of my trip, it's safe to say I was pretty fed up. Even to the point where I was swearing myself that I would never go back to Paris. But months on, I only think fondly of the city. I don't really have a bitter distaste for it like I did when I left. Instead, I admire the culture, how in the afternoon, everyone relaxes by the river, drinking and eating cheese. But maybe, then again, I might just still be searching for that Paris I was promised.
Thanks for the heads up, Michaela. I went to Paris last year and I thought it was such a fantastic and beautiful place. But I also heard of the small amount of people that, you know, might not treat tourists that well. Regardless, I love Paris and I love to head back one day. But now, here's a track from I Know Leopard. It's Blame It On Me here on 2SER 107.3.
It's the morning on fire.
Get It Together, Sydney, the studio parties return to rinse the club clean across four euphoric nights from Friday, May 24 at the Opera House for Vivid Live. Two of the world's most cutting-edge electronic DJs get the subs rattling when Berlin-based American composer Lauren Halo headlines alongside rising K-House star Park Ye-jin. The iconic British house music architect, a guy called Gerald, brings three decades of game-changing beats on May 25, followed by Barcelona's DJ extraordinaire John Talabot on May 31. Taking out the parties on June 1 is Germany's legendary techno innovator Moritz von Oswald. Book now for the studio parties at Vivid Live on May 24, 25, 31 and June 1 at sydneyoperahouse.com. 2SER sponsors.
Well, I hope you're still comfortable and I hope you're relaxing with a nice cuppa. But actually, you might want to finish your beverage quick because we're about to go on a journey to the world of bush tucker. But first, let me ask you, what does bush tucker mean for you? You might think of damper, you know, that bread that is cooked in fire coals, or maybe your thoughts turn to eating witchetty grubs or foraging for berries. But there is a whole lot more to bush tucker than perhaps what you might already know. Stay tuned and you'll be taken into the world of bush foods and the role they play in the world today. To SCR 107.3.
You've heard them on The Band Next Door, now come see them live at the Loft UTS Friday, June 7. We've got some sad romance songs from the dusty attic of Yes Hot Bake, the dredgy radioactive riffs of Mazda 3, and to top it all off, the chaotic Balkan-inspired punk of Usta. Music from 7:30pm and free entry all night, located conveniently on Broadway. 2SER is a partner of The Band's Next Door.
Wiki Whack, here's the next track.
And started somewhere new, maybe Saturn, Jupiter, or Mars, where Bowie watches us through the stars. It's such a shame, 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 such a shame, shame. It's such a shame, 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 such a shame, shame. It's such a sh 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 shame. It's such a sh 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 shame. It's such a shame. It's such a shame. It's such a sh 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 shame. It's such a sh 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 shame.
That was Bats with a beautiful track, Shame. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Naomi McClellan took us to Mangrove Mountain to explore how foraging wild bush foods and learning survival skills play a role in broader social issues. She spoke to Jake Kassar, a local expert in edible and medicinal plants, who uses his bushcraft knowledge to mentor troubled youth and is a perfect example for how bush foods can benefit our physical and mental well-being. Now, I want you to strap yourself in as we fly back to Sydney, because in the second part of this two-part series about bush foods in contemporary Australia, Naomi brings us back to the city and visits the first Indigenous urban rooftop food garden in the culturally unique hub of Redfern.
The world of bush foods is complex and diverse, and I'm not just talking about the food. There is a growing interest in native Australian edible plants and a movement in the culinary industry to bring wild bush foods to the plate. However, with our growing population, it's not exactly sustainable for us all to go out foraging wild foods. Along with conservation issues, there are also issues regarding intellectual property rights for traditional knowledge holders and ensuring that they don't get cut out of the picture. So what opportunities do Australian bush foods bring for the future of food production, sustainability and social well-being? Well, here in Sydney, there is a unique Indigenous-owned and operated startup that has started to tackle those big questions.
My name's Christian Hampson. I'm one of the two co-founders of Yerrabingin. Yerrabingin stands for We Walk Together. It comes from my grandparents' language, so Manaroo or Mooktung, which means to speak properly. Yerrabingin is a company that Clarence Slocky started as a way to look at design thinking weaved with our own Indigenous knowledge as a way of designing solutions, essentially.
Those solutions include creating sustainable building features and boosting the use of native biodiversity in urban environments and planning. The recent established Yerrabingin House brings together millennia-old wisdom with modern building design and permaculture principles to produce the first all-Indigenous urban rooftop farm.
Environmental consciousness, which is very much, you know, interwoven into our spirituality, is what we see a lot of people, and particularly young people, are very interested in. The idea of it is a way to connect people to Indigenous knowledge around plants. People are very interested in food and food origin these days.
It's a pretty remarkable building too. The first thing I noticed when I arrived at the 6-star rated building are the several rows of large solar panels overhead, along with other high-tech facilities like irrigation systems that can connect to weather reports from the Bureau of Meteorology. The garden has 10 worm farms that are capable of processing up to 2 kilos of food scraps a day, with the idea to recycle food waste from the neighbouring cafes. Of course, the engineering of creating a fully functioning permaculture farm on a roof had to include a number of considerations.
It's like a big planter box, so engineering-wise there was a lot of work going into the issues with weight and putting stuff on the roof and what type of species to be used. So a lot of work was done by our team around how do we actually design it so it'd be successful. And thankfully, many native plants are well-suited to that and obviously well-suited to our continent, which is why they grow so well here.
My name is Matt McKay. I'm the project manager for this rooftop project and work with Yerrabingin on a number of projects around the precinct and beyond.
Matt is a local permaculture guy, and being a plant nerd myself, I had a good yarn about all the different species and symbiotic relationships of the plants around the garden.
There's a saying in permaculture that the problem is the solution. So your design brief for a rooftop garden is that you can't hold a lot of weight primarily. And you can't really have rich soil. It sort of has to be a very free-draining, sort of sandy soil mix. If you were to try and grow other foods, you'd have to do a lot of work in building the soil, and you'd actually be losing a lot of it because everything has to drain. We don't have earth below us, we have another floor. Yeah, so yeah, rooms and people, exactly. So everything has to drain. So then you arrive on these native food plants, which love free drainage, love exposed conditions, you know, don't mind the wind because a lot of them are coastal species, and require, you know, no nutrients to minimal nutrients. We actually haven't put any fertilizer in this garden at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
This was my second visit to Yerrabingin, and I was pretty impressed with how lush all the plants had grown in the month between.
So we're just coming up to 3 months, and most of the plants came in as either small pots or tube stock, which is pretty small. So they've really adapted to the conditions because, you know, these are their favoured conditions. But, you know, even knowing that, we've been surprised with how well they've gone. So it's a very successful experiment at this point.
Of course, beyond sustainable building design and bush food production, there are critical components of this project that disrupt conventional approaches to ending Aboriginal disadvantage and protecting culture.
I guess you can sort of see it as, you know, both an ancient and a future food source because they are so hardy. And we're really trying to experiment and push the diversity of native foods. You know, we are creating a template which is primarily designed for Aboriginal communities to use as, I guess, a model of empowerment and, you know, and connection. At the moment, I think the current estimate is it's between 1 and 3% of native food actually being grown or supplied by Aboriginal people. And that's an industry that is going through a huge boom at the moment. Again, Aboriginal people being cut out to a large degree. There's also issues with wild harvesting as this trend gets bigger and bigger, and even, you know, on a commercial scale, when the demand increases, it can add a lot of pressure to communities and you know, yeah, the harvesting can become slightly unsustainable. We're just trying to teach as well as, you know, offer opportunities for Aboriginal people to work in this kind of new industry, which is gaining a lot of growth, where you can have a job where, you know, you get to look after culture, get to look after community, and you get to care for country, which is ideal. And we've got dreams of an endemic and, you know, forageable landscape eventually and embedding that into design.
I think Clarence and I have designed a business model that's quite different to many other Indigenous businesses. So we're, you know, essentially a company that's Indigenous owned, but we're operating in the broader environment and looking to bring our social capital into the design space. The idea we're hoping is that our model can be adapted by, and not just Indigenous communities in Australia, but this type of model could be used with Indigenous communities around the world. So that's what we're sort of hoping for in the future.
That was Naomi there taking a look at the future of native produce and the urban food production. Listening to that was my own moment of, wow, I've never thought of that before, because why shouldn't we have rooftop farms? You know, in my opinion, rooftop gardens are great utilizations of rooftop space and can apparently even act as a form of insulation. Stay tuned, as I've got a sweet track coming up. It's Kamichi by Flower Truck here on Macquarie Sunday Sessions on 2SER 107.3.
New York R&B star and choreographer Tiana Taylor makes her Australian debut this May for Vivid Live. Fresh off her Kanye-produced smash second record, melding new and old R&B with incredible flair, Tiana's electrifying presence in the beautiful Joan Sutherland Theatre is one performance you will not want to miss. Book now for Tiana Taylor's Australian debut on May 29 at sydneyoperahouse.com. 2SER sponsors.
Don't miss the Hidden Pulse at Vivid Live, a moving image program in collaboration with M+, Hong Kong's new museum of visual culture. 5 days of talks, films and free exhibitions with artists Wu Sang, Arthur J. Farr, Cheng Ran and more, exclusive to Sydney Opera House. May 29th to June 2nd. Book now at sydneyoperahouse.com/The Hidden Pulse. 2SER sponsors.
to SER 107.3.
That was Kamichi by the Sydney-based band Flower Truck. Really cool vibes in that song. It reminds me of space a bit, actually. And speaking of space, perhaps next time if I host a Sunday session again, we could perhaps travel to space, because recently NASA announced that they are going to the moon to stay by 2024. That's only 5 years away, guys. But perhaps we should save a bit of money first, because I hear it might be a bit expensive. Plus, I'm not really ready for any sort of G-forces that I might experience on the way. So maybe we'll put our moon and space trip on hold for a bit until I've gotten a bit more fit, you know. Well, we've arrived back home from our trip around the world, and unfortunately that brings us to the end of our journey together, as I must now hand it off to Ed Bennett, who will be taking you through the next session of the Macquarie Sunday Session. Just a few quick thank yous that I need to hand out. Firstly, to our producer Michaela for keeping us in line, creating the marvellous show you've been hearing, and also taking us to Paris. A big thank you to Naomi, our panel operator, for creating the amazing sounds of the show and allowing us to explore the amazing Redfern Garden rooftop. And finally, to you for travelling with me tonight on our wonderful trip around the world. Now, if you did miss out on anything from the show or would simply like to relive the magical times you had as we travelled from country to country, you can catch up and re-listen to the previous Macquarie Sunday Session shows on the 2SER website, 2SER.com, and search for the Macquarie Sunday Sessions, or you could find us on Facebook. You're listening to Macquarie Sunday Sessions on 2SER 107.3, and I'm Tom Benson, and until next time, so long, farewell, goodbye.
You're listening to 2SER with Ed on 107.3.
Thanks, Tom. You're still listening to Macquarie Sunday Sessions, the show by Macquarie University students. Now with me, Ed Bennett, right here on 2SER 107.3. And we have a great set of songs and stories coming up for you tonight. We have Hamish bringing you an understanding of the changing environment in Sydney's southwest, Nick on the demise of the great Australian housing dream, and a little radio play by myself called the USS Bishop. But before I start, I'm not alone here tonight. I've also got Nick with me. How are we going, Nick?
Yeah, good, Ed. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Now, you're doing a story on the demise of the Great Australian Housing Dream. What was the inspiration there?
Yeah, well, I think for most Australians, the Great Australian Dream is to own your own home. And I think for a lot of young people, especially now with the crazy prices that we're seeing in Sydney and Melbourne and most areas of Australia, for lots of young people like us, that dream of owning our own home really doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, it's a scary thought, thinking I'll never be able to afford a home. But let's quickly change the subject and get into our first song. And that was Eternal by Holly Herndon right here on 2SER
107.3. 2SER wishes to acknowledge the custodians of the land from which we broadcast, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and the Wadumatagal clan of the Darug Nation, and their elders past, present and emerging. We acknowledge and respect their continuing culture and the contribution they make to the life of this city and this region.
A big talking point throughout the election was housing prices. So why was this such a focus? Because our major cities and coastal towns are becoming overpopulated, making it nearly impossible for first home buyers to get into the housing market in those areas, therefore forcing people to buy up land out west. Our reporter, Hamish Southwell, puts the change into perspective.
Sydney's southwest has changed dramatically. Think of yourselves as settlers. In 1788, shortly after the landing at Sydney Cove, you're searching for your herd of cattle that have gone missing. It's only until 1795 where you find the missing cattle, based around the Nepean River in the MacArthur region. Now take yourself to 2019. Oran Park has grown to a population from zero to 7,500 in under 8 years. Development has taken place in Badgerys Creek for the Western Sydney Airport, just as communities in the MacArthur region brace for a decision to be made on the M9 proposal. From the birthplace of agriculture to now one of New South Wales's most booming real estate areas, it has forced farmers to sell up and buildings to go up. However, there is one group that strives to encourage agriculture in a place of booming development, the Camden Show.
Where do you go for family fun? Come to the Camden Show. Young and old kids, mum and dad, come to the Camden Show.
Former Camden Show committee member John Cartwright says the show is about promoting agriculture, as it is still a country show.
Camden Show is steeped in history. It started in 1886 and has been running ever since. It's been slowly growing and growing as our community around us grows, and this year we had record attendance of about 44,000 people coming through over 2 days.
The beauty of Camden Show is that it allows visitors to really become immersed within agriculture.
Well, I see the purpose is twofold. One is it's a showcase of our local area's agriculture in which competitors or farmers can compete for prizes for the best animals, best produce, best events, whether it be show jumping, dairy cattle, poultry, needlework. But very importantly is an opportunity for us to educate our community.
So why is the Camden Show trying to promote agriculture?
Unfortunately, the urban communities seem to have forgotten where a lot of their food comes from, their fibres come from, and therefore they don't understand the importance of supporting agriculture nationally. It puts food on our table. And the Camden Show gives us the opportunity to showcase that and to help educate children, but sadly help educate the need to help to educate adults of where our food comes from, where our milk comes from. It doesn't come from a supermarket. It comes from dairy cows, or it comes from vegetable farms or the like.
I went on a tour of Camden Show to find out what John was talking about. It's Saturday, the 28th of March at 4 p.m. in the afternoon. Sun's out and it's packed. There's a lot going on. Grandparents, mums and dads, kids and teenagers all spread out, taking note of what's on offer. There's dairy and beef cattle, along with horse jumping out the back, landscape photography and paintings in the hall. As chooks and turkeys are in the poultry pavilion, then there's the dodging cars and show bags for all the kids. As the clock strikes 4:15, the grand parade commences. The main arena is filled with all things important in the 2019 show. Old automobiles, trenches, cross polo teams, motorbikes, tractors, and then there comes my personal favourite, the bullocks. The owner of the bullock team spoke to the arena announcer and put agriculture's changing dynamic into perspective.
No one now is working bullocks in the bush for a living. There's only two or three of us that actually still go to the bush and
extract the timber like we've done traditionally. It's a dying art, but people don't realise that where we stand here now, this country would have been cleared with bullock teams.
Times are changing, and so too is the landscape. But did you realise how much it has already changed?
That was Hamish Southwell on Farms to Houses. And look, it's pretty interesting to think how quickly landscapes like that change. But right now, let's jump right into our next song, and that's She Said by L.A. Mood.
Sydney Film Festival returns from June 5 to 16 with over 250 of the best films, famous guests, raucous parties and red carpet premieres. See the greatest, strangest and most exciting Australian features and documentaries alongside the best of international festivals, including Sundance, Berlin and Cannes. Sydney Film Festival takes over 8 iconic cinemas across Sydney for just 12 days. Tickets are on sale now, so be quick. See sff.org.au for more. 2SER is a media partner of Sydney Film Festival.
You are listening to 2SER 107.3, and we are on Macquarie Sunday Sessions. I was just talking to Nick just before about, look, when you're at a party and you don't know what to talk about, what are your go-to talking points? What are the things that you want to say to just get the conversation going with anybody? And I was thinking about it. I did a little bit of research, Nick, so I've got some questions lined up for you. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready, Ed.
Okay. So what's the worst present you've ever received and why? And I know I read that and I thought, I know. I've got an answer for this. I'm ready.
The worst present?
Yeah, what do you reckon for you?
Probably clothes.
Clothes?
Yeah.
Oh, mine's clothes. Can I tell you mine?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, so it was circa 2017 Christmas time. It was a shirt that was two sizes too big and a book that said 2 for 1 on it, and it was clearly the 2.
The 50 cent one.
It was the 50 cent one, exactly. The one that they got for free. I was enraged. You know? And I feel like buying clothes that is that are two sizes too big is spiteful in any culture. Do you have any specific ones right now?
For me? No, yeah. I think the clothes one. Because
just in general clothes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've actually learned to really appreciate socks, though. You know, I used to hate the socks, but I can't get enough of them now. A new fresh set of socks really gets my gears going.
It changes when you get older. When you're young, you don't want that. But when you're older, it's something that you actually really need.
Yeah. Can we go to the second one?
Yes.
All right. If you could do anything illegal without getting caught, what would you do? And obviously, safe answers, please, Nicholas. Safe answers.
I don't really know. What's yours?
Breaking and entering, for sure. But nothing malicious, obviously. I mean, I just, you know, you're walking around some of the nicer neighborhoods. You're like, I wonder how the other half lives, you know?
Okay.
So I'm just going to, you know, throw a rock in, you know, see what's happening in their living room. I bet you they have all the streaming services. I get to eat their food, get to hang out with their dogs. I reckon that's a good day out.
Well, it'll definitely be interesting to see, like, you know, they've probably got a balcony looking over the water, probably got a beautiful view.
Oh, exactly. I just want to go over to that balcony and just, like, whisper, like, this is my city. You know? I also looked at conversation starters when you're talking with kids. Obviously, you can't bring up the same things with adults as you would with kids. My go-to, obviously, with a child is, how do you feel about the financial sector this quarter? But usually they just know a lot more than I do, and I can't keep up. So
I don't know how many kids would have a great insight into the economy, but...
Well, you'd be shocked. And so the go-to question that they suggested was, what's your favorite word? And I've got one.
Favorite word?
Favorite word.
Okay, what's yours?
Lozenge.
Lozenge?
Yeah, and I'll tell you why. One, it's not a word that comes up that often, but every time it does, I think it's a little bit of a treat. And second of all, nobody knows how to spell lozenge. All right, it's a semi-common word. Nobody knows how to spell it, okay? Because you just never need to write it down.
But why is it your favorite word?
I just come across it a lot. I think I'm just sick too much.
Oh, because lozenges are the little, like...
Yes. Oh, I didn't explain what a lozenge was. Yeah. So they're these little kind of medical lollies that you get when you have a sore throat.
Oh, okay.
Some of them just numb your mouth and make you really uncomfortable. Some of them just taste like blackcurrant. And obviously, those are my favorite ones. You are listening to Macquarie Sunday Sessions, a show made by Macquarie University students right here on 2SER 107.3. And let's just jump right into the next track.
Visionary, inspired improviser, musical surrealist, African-American artist Lonnie Holly makes his opera house debut this May for Vivid Live. As mythical as he is musically gifted, Holly was born in racially segregated Birmingham, Alabama, the seventh of 27 children. A self-taught musician, Holly started releasing and performing music in his 60s. His latest release, Myth, was hailed as one of 2018's Records of the Year. A storyteller of the highest order, immerse yourself in the deeply expressive music of Lonnie Holly on May 31 at Vivid Live. Book now at sydneyoperahouse.com. 2SER sponsors.
I'll have a drink for you. You're gonna be a mother soon. I'm so happy for you. I just thought I might be next in line. It's okay though, I'm having fun. And while there is no one who's dependent on me, I gotta live it up.
were just listening to Fear of Missing Out by Ainsley Wills.
Are you a business operating in the City of Sydney local area? The 2019 New South Wales Business Chamber Business Awards is looking for businesses in the Sydney City region to enter the program before June 17. There are 13 categories awarded, so why not celebrate your business? For full details on how to enter, visit sydneybusinessawards.com.au. City of Sydney sponsors 2SER 107.3.
Ideas, perspectives, conversations. Macquarie Sunday Sessions, 107.3.
The great Australian dream has always been to own a house. Owning your own fibro house with that quarter acre lot was the dream after the end of World War II. But does that dream still exist for young Australians today? Is it still a realistic goal to own a house in Australia? Nicholas Trappett reports for Macquarie Sunday Sessions.
The great Australian dream, to own your own home. The bricks and mortar or the fibro home on a quarter acre. Does this dream still realistically exist for young people? 50 years ago, you could buy a house for tens of thousands of dollars. But today, house prices are soaring, even with recent downturns in the Sydney house prices. The great Australian dream was to work hard, build a house, and live happily. But this seems out of reach for many young people now. In 1900, it cost a quarter of your weekly wage to pay off your home. And in 1918, when the First World War ended, the government gave out generous loans so everyone could own their own home, and this saw new suburbs flourish. Ray Martin reported in 1999 for the program Our Century, 7 out of 10 Aussies were new homeowners, and one day's work paid for the mortgage.
In the 20 years after World War II, home ownership made its biggest jump of the century. 7 out of 10 Aussies now had their foot in the front door. And inside that front door, you'd find all the trappings of 60s suburbia.
Most of us live in the average type of Australian house, which costs us about one day's pay a week. These suburbs are compact, but every house has a garden back and front.
But how can young people achieve this dream anymore, especially in Sydney? Nine News finance editor Ross Greenwood highlights very well the situation with house pricing in Sydney. It's simply overpriced. And because of this, there's a generation of young people who are giving up their hope of ever buying their own home. And this has become even more difficult after the Royal Commission into the banking sector. This has seen the big banks put further restrictions, making it even harder for young people to qualify for loans. The banks are saying that you need to have larger deposits, starting at 20%, and they are valuing property much less than in previous years.
What you've actually had in both Melbourne and Sydney is overpricing, yes. Significant overpricing. And so we know that housing became unaffordable for many people. So these are forecasts that are coming out of Morgan Stanley at the moment. They say Sydney over the next 12 months down another 3.3%. Now, do bear in mind that from peak to trough right now, Sydney prices are down more than 7%. In Melbourne, they're down more than 5%. So, but do bear in mind there's a fundamental problem here, and that is because the banks post the Royal Commission are now more wary about lending money. And also there have been restrictions put upon them lending money to investors and others. You know, if you go out there and try and buy a house right now, they're very tight on the valuations. So there's lots of people who have gone and bought apartments that are now going up and still got cranes on them, where the bank is saying to them, okay, you bought this for $900,000, but we actually think it's only now worth $820,000. You come up with the other $80,000.
More young people will need support from their parents. And if their parents are unable to help them, this will make it very hard to enter the property market, meaning they will have to continue to rent or live at home until they can save enough for a large deposit that's now required. With median house prices in Sydney just under $1 million, research has shown that the annual income and salary needed to repay without suffering mortgage stress, which occurs when more than 30% of pre-tax income goes towards loan repayments, is now $161,000. This is much higher than the average salary in Sydney. This is especially hard for young people, who according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, people aged between 21 to 34 earn an average of $1,076 per week, or about $56,000 a year. This is about $105,000 less than what is needed to afford to buy just the average house in Sydney. Ray Martin, in 1999, more than 20 years ago, anticipated what it would be like now.
So why do we do it? The great Aussie dream has been interrupted by two world wars, the Great Depression, and any number of natural disasters. And yet today and tomorrow and the next day, 300 Aussies will take a deep breath and buy their first property. 10 years ago, Australians would borrow twice their annual income for a home loan. Now we borrow three times what we earn.
Many have brought into the great Australian dream, but will you? With sky-high prices, tighter lending restrictions, enormous upfront costs, increasing costs of living and low wages growth have made the great Australian dream a nightmare, especially so for young people. Nicholas Trappett from Macquarie Sunday Sessions.
And that was Nicholas Trappett on The Great Australian Dream Does Not Exist. And it's wild to think that there was a point in time where the government was just handing out quarter acre plots of land with very low to no interest rates. Can you imagine if they did that today, Nick? What would you do if you were given a quarter acre of land anywhere in New South Wales?
I'd definitely want to build a house, that's for sure.
And where at?
I'd probably go Newcastle.
Newcastle. What's the inspiration there?
Well, I think it's kind of just far enough out of Sydney to get away from that hustle and bustle, but then it's kind of close enough that you can still commute back if you've got things to do.
Separate yourself from the 99. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. If I had the choice, I think I would choose, I would put my plot of land right smack dab in the middle of Sydney City. I'm talking Ultimo. I'm talking Surrey Hills. Inner city, yep. For sure. But I'm not building a house.
You're not?
No. I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So I'm going to invest in a water park.
A water park?
Right smack dab in the middle of the city.
Okay.
Yep. The reason there's no demand for it is because there's no supply. And that's my job. So I'm going to supply. And here's the twist. You ready?
Yeah.
No regulations.
All right.
No regulations. This water park is off the chain. There's going to be, you know, slides that go up and there's nothing to catch you. It's just, you know, your faith and your will to have the most incredible slide of your life. And look, of course, I'm going to lose a lot of money in
lawsuits,
probably. But I'm also making a lot of money. So I feel like I'm actually in the green here.
So you're going to weigh both of them up and hope that you make more money.
Yeah. And look, if it gets to a point where it's getting really dicey and I've injured more people than I have, you know, let go fine from the water park, I'll just sell off bits of the land or like rent them out.
Subdivide.
Oh, well, if I just invented the exact system we're stuck in.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, like, if I'm just renting out plots of land, isn't that just the situation we're in now? Have I just become the monster that I've tried to fight? Oh, boy. All right. Well, I'm going to marinate on that while we jump into our next track. You are listening to Macquarie Sunday Sessions with us, Macquarie students, right here on 107.3.
Thank you. see everything I'm thinking about. You understand more than me.
That was Tailwind by Elva. You are listening to 2SER 107.3.
We absolutely love our supporters at 2SER. To give back, we have regular supporter-only giveaways with tickets to gigs, movies, the theatre, exhibitions and more. Look out for 2SER e-news in your inbox to see what you could win. Stories, ideas, music and free stuff.
You win!
You are listening to 2SER. I am Ed Bennett, and we were just talking about, the Australian housing dream and spinning off from that, the Australian spirit, being able to build your own house. That's quite a feat. So, you know, I was marinating on that, and I was thinking, what really represents the Australian spirit the best? And I had to think about Australian television. I'm a big proponent of Australian television. So Nick, do you have any sort of Australian TV shows that are close to your heart?
Yeah, the iconic one that always comes to mind is Kath and Kim.
Oh, Kath and Kim. Absolute classic, a bit of a celebration of the Australian boganisms.
Yeah, I suppose that's what you would call it.
Yeah, I was always quite confused because clearly the actresses Kim and Kath were the same age, but I didn't understand, and they were mother and daughter in the show, got that.
Yeah.
But I didn't understand how old they were in relation to each other.
Right, yeah.
So is the joke that she's actually, that Kim, that's the young one, it's been a while, is the joke that she's supposed to be like in her 20s? Or is she actually pushing her late 30s, 40s?
You know, I've never thought of it that in depth.
You know, the Kath and Kim canon is sacred to me. So I think about it a lot. And it was massive back in the day. Huge show, right?
Oh, yeah. And they even did a movie.
I know. I've not seen the movie, but I did hear about it. I was walking past, the cinema when those posters were up. Did you hear about the American version of the show?
They did an American version?
Yeah, it wasn't awesome, I'll admit. So it's a bit soulless. It was cosmetically very similar. Everyone looked like they did in the Australian show. It just didn't have the sort of Australianisms, that sort of Australian spirit in it. And I think that's kind of gets into exactly what I was kind of bringing up before, right? Where, it's got this Australian spirit imbued into the fabric of the show.
I don't think the show will work without the Australian.
Yeah, right. The second you take that out, it's just a bizarre show about a mother and daughter.
Mm, that's right.
Yeah. Okay, if I had to think about it, I would say maybe Round the Twist is probably my favorite Australian show.
Yes, Round the Twist.
Round the Twist, absolute banger. I remember watching it. I think I was watching it quite recently even, and I had a friend walk in on me and he said, "That show is cursed."
Cursed.
Yeah, and I've never heard a better description of Round the Twist than cursed. It is the most bizarre show. For those who haven't seen it, it's a show about three siblings.
You know what I remember the most about it? The theme song. Do you want me to get it up?
Yeah, shoot.
Yeah, let me play some.
Strange things happen when you're going round the twist. I don't know the words exactly.
Yeah,
banger.
How good's that?
Banger.
I know.
I love it.
You know, that was just off the internet, but the top comment on that was, "This should be the Australian national anthem."
That's incredible.
That was the top comment.
I rate that. I would love to,
1,600 likes just on that one comment.
1,600 likes. That's 1,600 people with the right opinion. That's what I say. And I think we will jump right into our next song, and that's Book Smart by Holiday Ghosts.
Time.
Under the musical direction of Brian Ritchie from the Violent Femmes, catch the Spirit of Chiricai, an epic musical celebration of an Aboriginal surf life-saving legend, this May at Vivid Live. Featuring extraordinary First Nations, Australian and international performers, evocative visuals and a joyous mix of rock and oceanic grooves, come revel in the amazing life of a true Aussie hero. Book now for the Spirit of Chiricai, May 27 at sydneyoperahouse.com. To SER sponsors.
You're listening to Macquarie Sunday Sessions with Ed on 2SER 107.3.
I don't know about you, but I reckon that last song was out of this world. And you know what else is out of this world? Our next story.
This is Captain Leroy Callister of the planet ship Bishop, currently aboard the bridge with my lovely crew. Cosmic radiation is at a minimum, so our ETA to the Proxima Centauri space station is within the next 2 hours.
Sir, just curious, why do you keep calling it a planet ship when all the other captains call it a starship?
Well, Lieutenant, I can only speak for myself, but I've never been to a star, and I certainly wouldn't bring a $2 trillion spacefaring vessel near one. Been to a lot of planets, though.
Why don't you just say spaceship, then? That seems more applicable. You spend more time in space than on planets anyway, right?
Who's your captain?
You are, sir.
Yeah, I don't like this attitude that you've got going right now. You know, it's this type of behavior.
Sir, we have a ship headed directly for us, and they're trying to hail.
Oh, right. Well, put them on then. Hello, this is Leroy Callister of the planet ship Bishop. How can we help you?
What?
What?
Did you just say planet ship?
That's right.
Did anybody tell you you're the captain of a starship?
Okay, so we were just talking about this. How many planets have you been to compared to stars?
Well, our species exists in a solely gaseous form, so going to stars is a transcendent euphoric experience we frequent.
Oh, okay, well, that doesn't really apply to humans, so I still feel like I'm right.
You could just say spaceship.
I know, I just choose not to. What do you want?
Ah, right. My apologies. I am the Grand Minister of the Spartax Imperium, and we here on the Starship Omega would like to extend a blaster to you in a sign of hostility.
You want to shoot at us?
With the intent to kill, yes.
Okay, but why though?
You're in our space space.
Space space? Okay, Grand Minister, I'm gonna give you 2 minutes to change course and recant your threat before we open retaliatory fire.
Understood. Let me confer with my crew. Okay, so how many crew talks in 2 minutes?
Lieutenant, put them on hold.
Yes, Captain. You are aware this ship has no weaponry, right?
Of course, but they don't know that.
We do now.
What? I thought I said put them on hold!
Grand Minister can never be put on hold.
I don't even know where that ranks in your military.
Military? We're florists.
Why do you want to kill us, then?
I already told you. Space, space.
Oh, my. I was actually pressing Shift M instead of Control M. That's why they didn't mute us.
Lieutenant, I will kick you out an airlock, I swear to Space Jesus. Well, Grand Minister, okay, can we at least leave your space, space?
So, if we redirect now, we'll be adding an extra 12 hours to our trip. We don't have the fuel for that.
Is that more or less than 2 minutes?
Shut up! Alright, Grandy. We're gonna need to go through this route. So either you move, or we go straight through you.
Then we have no choice but to destroy your ship.
There are like 5 other people on this bridge right now. Why am I the only one freaking out?
Maybe they thought adding more people to this sketch would overcrowd it. Especially seeing that everyone needed to be identifiable just by their voice.
What did I tell you about getting meta?
We've decided to just go ahead and shoot you. This whole conversation has been a colossal waste of our Plutox.
You don't have the Plutox to shoot at us.
Plutox are a unit of time. You sound ridiculous.
Come in, planet, ship, Bishop. We have a few hostiles hanging around your 12, so we're rerouting you and we'll refuel you on the way. Bishop? Bishop, do you read me?
That was USS Bishop by me, Ed Bennett, on 2SER 107.3, and you were listening to Macquarie Sunday Sessions, a show made by university students of Macquarie University. And look, I know that was a bit of an odd one for sure, bit of a curveball right at the end there, but I thought we might need a bit of a palate cleanser. So this has been 2SER 107.3 Macquarie Sunday Sessions, and we're about to throw over to Felix and Herds as they take us on a murder mystery world tour in Death of the Reader. But before that, I just want to thank you for listening, and we will be back next week. So tune in then. Nick, how do you feel like we went?
Yeah, that was really good. And that last piece was really interesting, and it just had me thinking, if you went to space, what would you take with you?
Am I allowed to bring my dog?
Logistically, how would that work?
Well, she's not backpack sized, but I think I could probably, if I get her in the fetal position, I could probably get her in there. I'd probably work it out. I don't know if they have dog food there, and I don't really want her eating human food. Okay, sorry guys, we're gonna leave it there.